that I should give a token, the third one, the first one is aggression. Somebody asked me to give a token attachment. Unfortunately, I don't know who was talking about. Never lost sight when looking for a talk at a silent time. The reason also why I chose this talk on attachment because it's a very fundamental concept in Buddhism. To understand and to know its dangers and to know how to overcome those attachments which just cause us pain and other people difficulties. And also because the attachments which we develop in life cause difficulties no matter what religion you're in. This is a practical part of learning how to live life without creating too much suffering for oneself and others. Much of the suffering of human beings comes because of attachments. And we have to understand what those things are and how to deal with them. So I'm going to begin by just describing what we mean by attachment. And going into detail about its causes and how to overcome it. If we really do need to overcome it. Now first of all, to explain what attachment means, we're not clinging and not grasping onto either a person or a thing, or even into a state of your own body or a state of your mind. The object of attachment can be many things, but the attachment is always about clinging and grasping onto something. When we talk about those attachments which we have, whose source is not the body but the mind, quite often we can just understand it by using the symbology of holding on to something and not letting go. Just as one may take hold of any object, like I'm holding a grasp now, attachment is clinging onto it, grasping it, and never letting it go when it becomes a time to do so. However, when we talk about attachment so often that people understand that attachment is like a duality, in a sense that one either attaches to something or one is indifferent about it, that one couldn't care less about something. And however, when we talk about this quality of attachment, it's not just two things, an either or. The something there in the middle, which I wanted to point out this evening. Like many things in Buddhism, we talk about a middle way. And the middle way is usually the wise way, the way which leads to no problems, which is often called the happy way. And certainly when we're talking about attachment and its opposite, which is indifference, not caring, not bothering, not doing anything about what needs to be done, not caring, not loving, not forming friendships, etc. What is this middle way between attaching and clinging on to something no matter what, and not holding on to anything? And perhaps I'm going to begin now by discussing this one which is in the middle, between attachment and what you might call indifference. This is the ability to use whatever comes along in our life to make use of it, and to enjoy the company of one another, to appreciate a lovely warm sunny day, or to appreciate the rain when it comes, but to be able to let it go when it goes. This is the ability to enjoy and to let go. It is in the middle between what we call attachment, clinging on no matter what, and indifference. And it's first described by a famous simile which the Buddha once gave of the simile of the raft. He gave this simile especially describing the path of practice in Buddhism. That it can be a simile which has extended to many areas of our life. The simile of the raft goes like this. The person wanted to cross from one bank of a river or an ocean or a sea to another bank. And not finding a bridge or a boat, he decides the only thing he can do is to build a boat himself, actually build a raft. So they get together twigs and sticks and vines from the jungle. They try to build this raft, laying on top of it, moving hands and feet, they paddle across to the other side. And having got to the other side, to describe what attachment is and what this middle way is, he said the one person when they get to the other side starts to think what a great benefit this raft is, perhaps will be of use in the future, they decide to keep it. just in case. And so they end up having used the raft across the river, pulling it on their head and walking away. This great big heavy raft is a great burden, never letting it go. Now, just in case. This is called attachment. And this is what the Buddha referring to the path of the stupid person, because it is not wise. The wise person, once they cross the sea, they cross the river, they realize this raft has been a great use, a marvelous raft, but I don't need it anymore. And it's not wise, it's not clever, just to keep carrying it around just in case. So they leave it by the bank. Perhaps I can leave it for someone else who wants to cross back again, or whatever. But they don't carry it around with them afterwards. This is the idea in Buddhism, of being able to enjoy and make use, but when it's obvious that it's time to let things go, one finds it very easy to leave that raft by the side of the river and to walk on, unburdened, unfettered, lightly through life. The other alternative, the careless person, or the indifferent person, just doesn't even make a raft and doesn't do anything, just sits there and just doesn't even get across. Now sometimes, when we talk about attachment, sometimes people think that the opposite of attachment is the only way of doing nothing. Not forming relationships, not doing anything in this world at all. However, I'm pointing out today this middle way. And I've been pointing out this middle way, symbolized by this raft example again and again during this talk. But to go on with this talk on attachment, I'd like to describe some of these attachments by describing their objects and emphasizing just how we can create problems for ourselves by carrying around things, and it should really be time to let them go. Now obviously one of the first things we can talk about is attachment to other people, where they can be our lovers, our friends, our relations. And so often that whenever there is a separation in our life, either through death, or maybe through a divorce, or even through a person journeying overseas, so often that's the time when we see the sin which we call our attachment to that person. When it's time for them to go, we don't want them to go. We won't let them alone. We won't put the raft down once it served its purpose. And we carry it around, we cause problems for ourselves and problems for others. In my life as a monk, my role as a monk, I see this again and again. Quite often, at the time of a death, or a time of impending death. My role as a monk, part of my job is to look after Buddhists at the time of their dying, to make sure they die well. And the task of counseling someone who's about to die is not that difficult. It's quite easy to be able to get them to come to terms with their passing away. But so often I've told me that those who are quite accepting of their impending death, that there is one of the greatest pardons of their children, their parents, their friends, will not let them go. They will not let them die. And that becomes a great worry and concern for them in the last few days of their life. It is their relations and friends are so attached to them, they would not let them pass off into a new life. And that creates so much pain and difficulty for the person who's about to die. When we look upon it, really, in depth, you know, we think we love other people. We really care for them. But quite often, our love is very much a love of ourselves, a wanting that person there because we feel happy. If we really did care and love that other person, and it's time for them to go, we'd let them go. When we talk about this idea of love, a love is like allowing and embracing the whole of nature. Just as if like love to a person is embracing the whole of a person, so what I call like love of life is embracing the whole of life. Can I give you an example of this? Those of you who have children, if you really love your children, then that love will be so strong no matter what they do, you'd always give them your life. I was talking to a lady this morning, she had two sons. I was saying, look, whatever your friends do, if they say steal and end up going to jail, would you not love them? Would you take your love away from them? She said, no. I said, I wouldn't approve what they did. You know, I'd tell them off, but I would still carry on loving them. And this is really what we mean by this work of love. It's something which can accept mistakes, it can accept faults, and come back nevertheless. And when I'm talking about someone who loves someone properly, they would love them even if they make the biggest mistake and go and die on you. Because sometimes that's one of the biggest mistakes, isn't it? Because that hurts the other person. Imagine those people who love you, who care for you. Your great friends, your relations, your lovers, your people you live with. But sometimes that, if they, the last thing you want is if they die. Because that hurts you so much, the separation. And so they feel that. They don't want to do that. I was telling the story of a monk who lived in England, who was always very sick. He will never get better. He became sick in Thailand and was diagnosed as having two strains of typhus fever at the same time. He got sent over to a monastery in England, and for years he was never getting better. He was on the edge of dying. And so one day, one of the head monk at this monastery went up to his room and told him, because this head monk had a great insight, knowing what the problem was, and told this very sick monk, saying on behalf of all the monks and nuns in the community of Buddhists who support this monastery, I've come up here to give you permission to die. He said that with meaning, because this monk thought that was the right thing to put aside for friends, to go and die. Now, finally, he was given permission to die. As soon as this monk said those words, the monk who was sick just burst out weeping, crying his eyes out. Because it hit him very deep inside of his heart that he didn't want to die. He was trying everything not to die, to please others. And this monk had enough understanding of what he really mean by love to say, it's all right to die, you can die. So in that, he was understanding something much higher and deeper than attachment to another person, to say that not that I'm going to be indifferent, not that I'm going to not care for you, nor am I going to be so attached that I demand you live forever and that you get well. But I can find this middle way, which says that if you die, I will allow that. But also that when a person does pass away and we do die, sometimes the attachment to that person will cause what we call that grief and sadness. Even when the raft has fulfilled its purpose, one cannot leave it and let it go. And this is attachment again. This attachment holding on to something, when it's hard to let it go, we find we can't do it. So that creates the pain and difficulty and the great suffering inside of our hearts. Wisdom should tell us that now it is the time to let go of that raft. Now is the time to let go of that person. Attachment doesn't let us. A wise person will care for their friends, for their relations, the people they live with. But when it's time for them to go, they can care so much for that person, they would let them go. And they can also care so much for themselves that they will not grieve and be sad so much. The alternative is, I described it in the following simile. It's called my simile of the concert. That when I was young, I used to like going to concerts. Maybe you like going to concerts as well. When we go to a concert, how do you feel when the concert has ended? When we go outside the hall into the night air, sometimes the night could be cold or rainy. When I used to go to concerts, it was in London. And I remember clearly, even now, that was many years ago, going out into the London streets, always drizzling, it seemed, within my memory, cold and damp. The concert was over. So I never felt sad, I never cried after the concert was over. because I always appreciated what a wonderful concert that was, what a marvelous performance, and how privileged I was to be part of a marvelous performance. And that's how I look upon death, as someone I've known, someone who's been my friend, someone I've loved. Thank you for marvelous performance. And whenever I feel sad after the performance is ended, the attachment always wants the performance to go on, and on and on and on indefinitely. And we feel sad and we cry when the performance ends. But wisdom tells us that all performances have to eventually end. They all have their time when they finish. We all know that there'll be another band playing next week. And so instead of attaching to one particular performance, when it ends, we can let it go. We can put the laugh down. We always know there'll be another laugh there we can make when we ever reach the next river to cross. So this is the attachments which we can have to people which cause us pain. We don't know that. Instead, we can look upon people as concerts. I'm not saying we don't go to concerts because we're afraid that when they finish, we'll cry. We can go to concerts, we can enjoy every moment of them. And when they finish, we can have a sense of peace inside of our heart. Not pain, not grief. Thinking how great, how wonderful it was to have participated in that time. So we take each moment as it comes, and when it's enjoyable, we can enjoy it to the full. When it ends, we can let it go. There's this type of wisdom. It's not just people, or let's say not other people, it's also ourselves as well. Not attachment to things of ourselves, to things like our health of the body. When we're healthy, we can enjoy that, but then that health passes into sickness. What attachment does is we always have to be wary, always afraid of sickness. You're afraid of death. Why are you attached to this body so much? If you don't know, this body is a great burden, and letting it go is a great relief. And nevertheless, we're attached to these things, and we will not let them go. So often, when I'm driving a person close to death, this is what one has to keep on saying. The body is breaking up. The body is close to death. Let go. Don't fight. The time for fighting is over. When one is sick, there is a time for fighting. There is a time to try to heal the body and to survive. But we all know there is a time in our life when we're close to death. When struggle is just counterproductive, when it will not save our body, we will just torture our mind. That's the time when we have to learn how to let go and not attach the continuance of this body. And then we have the attachment. I talked about attachment to other people, and talked about attachment to oneself. One also has attachment to things in the mind as well. We have attachment to things like our intelligence, to our pride, sometimes attachment to our happiness. It's amazing, sometimes we have attachment to their pain as well. It's a strange thing that some of the things we're attached to which we will not let go of. For example, to show you how that we can be attached to even unpleasant things, what happens when someone calls you a fool? What most people do when someone calls them a fool, they start to think, they call me a fool. Why do they call me a fool? They've got no right to call me a fool. And what's happened is you've called yourself a fool three more times. No one who called you a fool once. And every time you think of it, they called you a fool again. And that's what hurts. Not what they actually say, but what you think about it. Why can't we just let these things go? They call us a fool and stop thinking about it. When unpleasant words are finished, when we don't think about it, then all the pain and difficulty is finished as well. Why is it that we attach so much that we keep on thinking of the pain of our task? Has anyone hurt you in the past? Why can't we let it go? It's an attachment, isn't it, to our pain? And some people carry their hurt of arrogance for year after year after year, never letting go, attaching to that which causes them great suffering. I've given a simile many times, and I usually use a simile for meditation, but I'm using a simile now just for general life, because I was talking to a lady this morning about people who have hurt her. And she was saying that she cannot forgive, you know, some of her family who have given her such a difficult time over the last few years. And I told her my simile of the suitcases. That some people carry around throughout their lives heavy suitcases. Just like, you know, seeing in airports or down the streets, around hotels, people are lugging enormous weighty suitcases through their life. Have you got suitcases which you carry around with you? The one of those suitcases in one hand is called the past. Things which have happened to you. And a lot of the times what we carry around with us is not the pleasant stuff, but the painful stuff. What he said, what she did. Your hurt is in that suitcase. On the other hand is the future, and a lot of that is fear, anticipation of what might happen next. Those suitcases can be very heavy. And you know, you don't have to carry them around. What, in the sense of meditation, what you do in meditation is you put those two suitcases down for half an hour and you pick them up again afterwards. At least in the meditation you can let them go. But in the sense of attachment, you don't just put them down, you empty them. You open them up and you find out what's not necessary and you throw them away. It's called forgiving. That's what we mean by emptying out the hurt from your suitcase. Forgiving. Some people say, but I can't forgive. That's called attachment. Attachment to your pain. Why? Then you forgive. What you're doing is you're hurting yourself. Some people say they can't forgive because that person needs to be taught a lesson. If I forgive them, they'll get even worse. I've got to hurt them to protect them from hurting others. Have you ever thought about, instead of like worrying about them, worrying about yourself? You need to care about you as well. Let alone the responsibility about teaching others, and teaching others not to hurt others. But why are you hurting yourself? By not forgiving, by not letting go, by keeping all of that heavy weight in your suitcase and carrying it around for year after year after year, sometimes a lifetime. Not alone the other person, look at yourself. And you deserve to empty out some of that suitcase and forgive and let go. But otherwise, that attachment to your pain, your things you've handled in the past, you're going to take to your grave. And if you're Buddhist, into your next life. Many lives. Carrying around these suitcases to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So our attachment says, if I don't need this. And lack of attachment to it says, I don't need this, and I can let it go, I can forgive the past. And if you can forgive some of the hurt which you carry around in your mind, the suitcases start to get very light. An example of this, and a very moving example, was one of these Cambodian men who is now living in Perth. When he first came to Perth, being a Buddhist, most Cambodians are Buddhist, we got to know him and got to know him very well. He had a very sad story, that when he was in Cambodia during the time of Pol Pot, I think he must be in his late 50s, maybe early 60s now, this man. So he suffered the regime of the Khmer Rouge. He was one of, as in that film, The Killing Fields, he managed to escape over the border into Thailand with his wife. And you can imagine a sense of freedom, having finally made it to the camp, their safety. And it's taken his freedom from torture, freedom from being killed, as he saw many of his friends and relations killed in very unpleasant circumstances. and sometimes tortured to death. He finally made it to the refugee camp over the border in Thailand. And there his wife got fever and died. And that was almost like a last straw for him. So close to escaping to a new life. And there his wife died. You can imagine some of your pain, but some of the pain of these people is just of another order altogether. He came over to Australia as one of the refugees, settled down. At first very difficult, but after a while getting himself established. There was another Cambodian woman who'd lost her husband in similar circumstances, and eventually married the lady, and quite happily married, but he had unfinished business with his ex-wife, his first wife, who died, just having almost got to the door of freedom. And so one day he asked the monks to come to a little ceremony. He offered food to the monks, as is usual in the ceremony, and after the food had been offered and eaten, he asked the monks to do some chanting. Then just before he did some chanting, he got his present wife was there, his present family were there. He got a picture, a photograph, which he'd been keeping, of his ex-wife. A very mangled photograph of the wife who died in Thailand. He put it in front of him. And while the monks were chanting, for about 15 minutes, he cried his eyes out. As he thought of his ex-wife. And crying his eyes out, when the monks finished chanting, he finished crying. And he put the photograph away. He'd let go of his pain. Now he was with his new wife. This is what I mean about emptying out your suitcase. And he would have all the reason in the world to have anger, to have hate, and to have hurt in his heart for what happened to him. But he let it go. He knew about how to stop attaching to such things. By doing a little ceremony in order to let go. I told the woman this morning, but if you haven't got a photograph of someone you love, if it's people you don't want to have a photograph of because they've hurt you, imagine them being in your suitcase, closing your eyes, meditating, and imagine this very heavy suitcase with all your hurt inside, or the people have hurt you. And taking them out one by one of your suitcase. I can imagine your exercise often works. Taking them out one by one, out of your suitcase and leaving them alone. And then closing your suitcases with anything still outside and picking up a much larger suitcase to carry for your life. It's wise to do this. It's allowable to do this. You can do this. It's all right. Actually, it's very healthy and helpful for everyone concerned. In this life, you do not need to be the punisher of everyone who's done things wrong. You do not need to be the teacher to put people in the right track. Your first responsibility is to look after yourself. And if you can look after yourself, and if you can heal yourself, if you can note the lack of attachment for yourself, then you can teach others, not before. If you're angry at someone else and you want to teach them a lesson, how does it come across? If you give out anger, you just get more anger back. If you want to teach them a lesson and you teach them with anger in your heart, they don't take you seriously, but they're sort of reacting to what you're trying to point out to them, they react to how you say it. And just the anger, the pain just goes on and on and on. One of the sayings of the Buddha is, you cannot pull out a person who's fallen into the swamp if you're also standing in the swamp. You have to be on dry ground to pull someone else out. If you've got hurt in your heart, you cannot teach another person about hurt. You have to pull your own hurt out, first of all. But even the hurt inside of our hearts, we have to somehow let go of, take out of our suitcase. It's called forgiveness. And if you could only realize it needs to be done, it can be done, because it's caring about yourself, you can actually do it. If you don't love yourself, if you don't care about yourself, you'll never know why you should forgive. Forgiving is freeing yourself of a very heavy burden. You do that first of all, and then you can go and teach others. So this is another part of non-attachment, is being able to forgive. Why is it we find it so hard to let go of attachment? Why is it so hard sometimes when they're even like a little dog or a cat? Because they're very fond of guys. Why can't we let them go? The reason is, the Buddha was saying, it's mostly because of not understanding clearly what life is all about. It's called ignorance or illusion. We tend to forget. What you forget is one of three things. You forget impermanence, you forget suffering, you forget that it's not mine. These are the three, they call in Buddhism, the three characteristics. In particular, we forget impermanence. The things we like, we want to be around forever and ever. Especially those people we love. Sometimes people make these rather romantic but rather ridiculous statements when they get married. I will love you, not just this life, as I did it say, for many lives. I'll marry you for 100 lives. Till the end of the universe, we will part. And maybe the next eon as well. Not realizing that whatever comes together has to part. It's a basic law of the world which no one can change. When you forget that what comes into our life has to go out of our life, that's when we expect people we like or even the animals we care for to be there forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Sometimes we don't even want to think that one day a nice little cat is going to die. Well, that our husband or our wife, our lover is going to pass away. Sometimes we don't even want to think that our favourite monk might one day go across the wide ocean and over to another place. But of course that has to happen eventually. If I don't go first, you will have to go first. We have to have a passing mind plan, don't we? Now, this is obvious common sense, but illusion teaches us that I don't even think about it, because even thinking about it is painful. No, said the Buddha. Thinking about it is happiness. It's wisdom. And it's peace. If you think about the person you really care for and love is one day going to leave you, you look after them even more. You care for them even more because you value them. What is impermanent, what's not always going to be there, you look after. What is permanent, what's always going to be there, you take for granted. So, understanding that a person is going to part from you means you care for them even more. And when they leave, you've thought about it enough, you've reminded yourself they're going to leave one day, when it happens, you're not shocked. You don't feel something has gone wrong. You want to go and blame somebody or something. You understand, this is the rules of life. This is the way life is. You can't change this. Impermanence is much bigger than you. It's not even, you can't even complain to your member of parliament to try and change that law. You're stuck with it. And once you understand impermanence, it means that whatever you like, whatever you care for, you will never get that attached to. But you will never forget that one day you'll have to let it go. So attachment for things often comes because we forget impermanence. We forget that our attachment is flouting the law, is going against a law which no one can change. Instead of trying to fight what you can't fight, you go along with it. Instead of fighting the current, which is far stronger than you, you flow with the current of impermanence. You use it. You make use of it. And so whether it's a concept, whether it's a person, you know it's not going to last, so you pay great attention. There's always a case when the great orchestra is coming to London, I'd make sure I visited it, I went to see it. because I knew it wouldn't sort of last very long. We'd only have a short season. And soon we'd be going to other countries. If it was a person I liked, I made sure that I went to see them, that I enjoyed their company, that I was kind and caring to them, we didn't make problems. Understanding impermanence means that life becomes more important. When the concept finishes, well, I've made the most use of it. When someone passes from your life, you can let them go. Not attached to them, because you know that such attachment is just stupidity. As stupid as carrying a rafter on your shoulders once you've crossed the river, once you've used it for its purpose, once you've enjoyed what it had to give you. And you know there's other rafts, other people you've met in your life. So we're going to attach to people once we understand impermanence. Nor do we get attached to our hurts, because any blame which people give you, if they say rotten things to you or terrible things to you, it's impermanent. The next moment, someone else will say something nice to you. Which one is correct? Who is right? Say, are the people who said there were nice things about us, they're the ones who are right. And other people, they didn't know what they're talking about. Today, coming into town, a van which was passing us called out something, they didn't know quite what. And I asked the driver, said, what's wrong with the van? He's been quite naive, and he said, no, they weren't criticizing the van, they were insulting you. I thought they were pointing out that we've got the lights on or something, because they're shaking their hands, pointing, whatever. If I come here, that sort of sometimes people bow. Who's right? Should I be bowed to, or have the fish shack at me? Neither is right. Or both are right. But the point is that if we're attached to things, we keep those things inside of us, and we keep thinking about them and remembering them, not allowing these things to be impermanent, not allowing them to go. Praise and blame, one moment you're praised, the next moment you're blamed, and you're praised again, and you're blamed again. Everyone has that in life. But isn't it crazy that we don't remember the praise? So we always carry around the blame. Isn't it really insane that we remember our hurt in our life? And very rarely we remember the pleasure of our life, the nice times. Isn't it crazy when someone asks you what sort of day you had at work today? You remember all the things which went wrong and hardly remember the things which went right. So the little is like our stupidity. And we're attached to something which we shouldn't really attach to. So the idea of understanding impermanence is we let things go, because they go by themselves anyway. We understand that change, so we can let the seasons pass. And if there's some part of it we don't like, you know it's going to change by itself. We don't need to push it away. So understanding about impermanence means so often we don't get attached to things. Whether it's attaching to, say, our children, we understand that they do grow up and they do leave. It's the saying, which I'm not sure where I heard it from, that if you put a bird in a cage and you never let it out, one day it's going to escape and it will never come back. Instead of putting a bird in a cage, if you let it fly free and you feed it and you care for it, then some days it will fly away, but it'll always come back. If we're children, this is a marvelous little saying, because if you put them in a cage, well, one day they'll leave and they'll never come back. You give them a little bit of freedom and care about them, feed them, just like a bird, they'll always be back for mum's cooking. It's the difference between attachment and caring. Attachment will not let a person go. It will cling on in such a way it smothers any happiness. Understanding impermanence allows people to go, and they come back again, and then they go again, and they come back again. And this is by once one understands impermanence, when one doesn't attach. Understanding the impermanence of one's own body, the impermanence of other people's body, impermanence of relationships, the impermanence of the weather, then one doesn't get upset when it's a terribly cold and windy day. One understands the impermanence of things going right and things going wrong. So when things go wrong, you don't think it's the end of the world. They go right again by themselves. Just wait, be patient. One understands impermanence. One doesn't get attached to the pain in life so much that one gets depressed. A lot of depression is about attachment. One gets attached to the pain and will not let it go. For a while, that leads to deeper and deeper depression. If you look at our deep pain and the difficulties and mistakes of these, you find out they change. A nice thing happens next time. So the first cause for the attachment was not remembering, not seeing the impermanence of all things. The second reason for attachment is not understanding what is happiness and what is suffering. If one understood what happiness was and what suffering was, one would not attach to so many things which weigh you down. You attach to these people because you think that they're going to make us happy. They made us happy in the past, that's why I love them and care for them. They're such beautiful people. And we attach to them thinking that that will make us happy. We want them always around because we think that having them around will bring happy for us. And what does that actually cause? It doesn't cause happiness at all, but suffering and pain. You don't understand what happiness is and what suffering is. And that which is suffering, you think is going to be cause of our happiness. Whether we may be attached to our house, we may be attached to a car, we may be attached to something, we go back and it's stolen. Why are you attached to it anyway? Because you think this is a source of pleasure and happiness and contentment for us. If we look more clearly, we find that no, it causes us pain. If we understood what real happiness was, we'd be able to let go and have a sense of peace inside of our mind. We'd be able to, happiness is, we'd be able to enjoy the happy moments when they come, and when it's time to go, we can let them go and leave it all alone. Happiness is not having heavy suitcases in our life. Happiness is that walking without too many things through our life, walking lightly through life. And the only way we can walk lightly through life is by letting go of a lot of the things we carry around with us. So we think we try and attach to things, or we tend to attach to things, thinking that thereby we will be happy. Sometimes you see people who they lose a loved one and think, I can never be happy again now that person is gone. You're the only person in my life, dear. If you left, life would not be worth living. Let's go to attachment, and that's not happiness. Actually, we all know, and as many of us know, we've been divorced or left some loved one, that we can't be happy without that person. Sometimes we're even more happy. The attachment to the other person, as if it is your possession. Or even like you think it's your car, and then one day it's in an accident and gets written off. And you get upset, or it gets stolen. All these things which we are attached to, we think is mine. That's why we're attached to them. Are these things really yours? The person who you're married to, the person you live with, are they yours? Sometimes you think they are, and that's why we're attached. If you know they're not, we keep on remembering they're not ours, then we can let them go. We can let them be as they are, not as we want them to be. And we can appreciate them for how they are, not how we want them to be. We're not attached from being this way or that way. When we think they're mine, we attach to them. I got a very good lesson in what's mine and what isn't mine when we had a great bushfire in our monastery 2 years ago. I personally had laid many of the bricks and the concrete and the roof and just about most of the other stuff in the buildings around the monastery in Serpentine where I live. I often say that there's some of my blood on almost every building because sometimes I would miss the nail and hit my finger. And it's actually literally true. You know, it was cuts and bruises and stuff. It, which happened in this bits of my blood on every building, and through serpentine bits of my skin as well. You did a DNA test on the bricks of the monastery, it would match mine. And one day, a great big fire came through this monastery, and it was so severe, we had to evacuate. And I certainly ran away with the idea that was it, the monastery is gone. And no buildings would be left, just rubble. It was a wonderful feeling. But you put so much work and effort at that time, about 9 years of hard work building up this monastery. You could go and let it go. I was actually quite surprised in the following morning and went there and found out there was hardly anything which was damaged. So I was prepared to allow the whole thing to collapse and go. You wasn't attached to it at all. You can leave it alone. You can allow what you've built up to be destroyed. That's called happiness and peace. So I was happy to allow it all to be destroyed, which meant I was even more happy when I found it wasn't. So you can appreciate the whole of life. You can be happy if it's destroyed and even happy if it isn't. So what happened was that understanding was not mine. It was out of my control, under the forces of nature. And I understand that not much, but everything of life is like that. Sometimes you think, my body is mine. We would call it my body. Is it your body? Then it goes wrong. We can't change it. You know, we can help in a little way. This is the difference between like indifference and attachment. We look after our body as best we can. We exercise it, we feed it, give it medicine when it's sick, but ultimately, it's not mine. Ultimately, like that raft, and it serves its purpose, we have to just lay it aside. Instead of on the banks of the river, we have to lay it aside either in Calcutta or Fremantle. Somebody once asked me the other day, what happens to you when you die? You go to Fremantle or Calcutta? That's the truth of it, isn't it? If I can see that. But anyhow, eventually you have to lay this down so you can... If you're attached to this body, it means you think it's yours. It's your possession. You're not going to let it go. No one can take this from me. No way. It's not yours, is it? Eventually you have to let it go. Sometimes we're attached to something which we call health. Is health yours? One day you're going to become sick. It usually happens at least before you die. Eventually you have to let go of health as well. Health is not yours, so don't get attached to it. Neither get indifferent to it. And find this middle way. Care enough for this body to keep it healthy. Look after it. But when it eventually goes, then it goes. This is the difference between being attached and being indifferent. You're attached if you think it's yours. You care when you understand what it really is. And so when you know it's not mine, then you're free. And it's not just free of the body and free of of health or sickness. It's also free of many of the states of mind which people get into. Well, we're talking about the pain in the body, the pain in the mind caused by the hurt of your past. You think you have been hurt. That person who was shouting at me this afternoon was shouting at me. Were they shouting at me or were they just shouting at my bald head and brown nose? What were they shouting at anyway? Were they criticizing when they criticize you? Were they hurting when they hurt you? If you think it's yours, then it's pain. So when we understand that all these things, these states of mind and these states of body, they don't belong to us. They're just things which arise and pass and pass away in this continuum we call mind. And someone says something bad, and we hear it, so we understand it's not mine, we can let it go. And we understand it can belong to us no more than the wind belongs to us. We can allow the wind to blow. We can allow the wind to pass. Where did the wind come from? No one knows. Where does it go to? No one knows. Wind is a very beautiful stimulus. We only know it when it's passing. So when clouds are blowing past, when we understand that it's coming from nowhere, going to nowhere, we can let it go. And once it's passed and done it. And so we don't carry around any pain in our mind. Even when our mind is upset, we realize it isn't mine. We can let it go. Even though when our mind is happy, we don't have to keep on clinging, even attaching to happiness. We can let that go as well. It's not mine. We understand just like the seasons of the year. Hot, rainy, cold, winter, summer. Our mind also has seasons. They're not ours. In the sense we don't control them. We cannot control the weather. We cannot control day and night. When we realize they're not ours, we don't get attached even to the states of mind, which arise and pass like the seasons of the year, like the light and the dark of day and night. And when we don't attach to these things, but we care about them, then there's no problem anymore. There's no pain because we're not clinging so desperately to it being this way. And when we don't cling to it desperately, being some particular way, when it's somewhere, some other way, we don't get upset. That's what suffering is called. Suffering is the difference between the way you want it to be and the way it is. It's that difference. Suffering is the difference between the way you want it to be and the way it truly is. So once one understands the laws of this world, the laws of change, the laws of what's really happy and what isn't, and the law is not mine, then you find you have very little attachment in this world. But you still care. But you can always let go. It's as if you are grasping life like this cup long enough to take a drink. But when you're taking a drink, you put the cup down. That way, your arm doesn't get tired. So that finishes this talk this evening on attachment. Has anyone got any questions or comments about this talk this evening? Yes, please. Okay, about planning, you're asking about planning. What planning is so you're saying, for example, on the assembly of the raft, that you have a raft, you cross one river, and having crossed one river, you know there's another river just 10 kilometres on, should you carry that raft to the next kilometre, 10 kilometres. What planning should always be is that planning is also subject to these laws, especially the laws of impermanence. So often many of my plans go wrong. The laws go wrong as well. Sometimes I think I'm going on to that river and I don't even get to that river. I go somewhere else. And sometimes I realize that instead of carrying love around with me, it's best to carry the knowledge of how to make a love. Because that's very light. And so one carries wisdom around with us. If one is going to carry anything around. If you carry the wisdom of how to make a love, then whatever bank one comes to, one will always have a way to cross. If one always carries rafts around with you, then okay, you may be able to cross the river, you won't be able to cross the mountain range. And plans are like that sometimes. Plans are limited. And so, if ever one makes plans, they should always be quite tentative. And the best way of planning is, instead of thinking what one is going to do, it's best to always have the plan of how one is going to do it. In other words, be able to do it with wisdom, with kindness, compassion. I often tell people that if you've got a very difficult situation to deal with, rather than thinking what you're going to do and making all these great plans and all the particulars and details, it's much better to just make the mind peaceful, make the mind calm and kind, and develop those qualities. And you find that if you're coming from that place, whatever you say, whatever you do, will be very useful and worthwhile. In just the same way that I don't plan exactly what I'm going to talk about. All I knew this evening was I couldn't talk about attachment. I didn't know exactly how or what I was going to say. But what I did was during the meditation to make my mind peaceful and kind. And that's the way that one can deal with, say, giving a talk in public. That's the way one can put oneself in a situation when one is counseling someone who's about to commit suicide. When you haven't been trained, you don't know what you're going to do, you don't know what you're going to say. You let your mind peaceful and calm and quiet, and the right things will come out. So this is, if one is going to plan as such, it's best to carry around wisdom, compassion, and the ability to make one's mind peaceful. To know how to make a raft, and carry that wisdom around you, rather than carrying all that wood and string and stuff like that. Do you want to come back on that with another comment? Sure. About can there be a functional type of attachment, and you're giving an example there. I say this for the cassette tape, so people who hear this tape can also hear your question. You give the example of someone who is young having to experiment with freedom because that becomes a useful experience, even though it can be painful for their later life. Indeed, I mean, there is such a thing as a functional attachment, and again, I give the simile of the raft again. While you're in the stream, you attach to that raft, you don't let it go until you go across. You cling to it, even though there may be great waves and rapids and rocks are going across, you cling to it. You only let it go once you're across, once it serves its purpose. And so, the reason I'm saying this is because I'm pointing out that what we really mean by attachment and clinging here is attachment which it's just like, say, you continue experimenting, having freedom, or taking drugs or whatever, not just in your teens, 20, 30, 40, 60 year old, you're still doing it. And that's not functional anymore. In other words, you know that once you've used the raft for its purpose, you've crossed it, you can let it go. And so whatever you employ in this world, whether it's, this was actually the main purpose of the Buddha's teaching on the similar raft, he said, these two things which I'm giving you, monks, whether it's morality, whether it's meditation, whether it's wisdom or your skillful means, use them as a raft. Get across. And maybe on the other shore, many people hear these teachings about detachment and they detach from that raft, you know, when they've only gone a few meters from the shore, and they get all wet and drowned. You cannot, like things like virtue and rules, the discipline by precept, these are rafts which one uses to get across. If one doesn't give them up until one is fully across, if one gives them up at all. This is the meaning of what the Buddha was saying, the functional meaning of the Dharma, the teaching, is to get you across from a world of confusion and even suffering to a place where one is completely wise, free of suffering, fully enlightened, understanding one's nature. And the raft is a need to do that. But whatever you use just until it serves its purpose. So it says that to me, you hold on to the glass long enough to take your drink and then you put it down. That's functional. So as long as I don't put the glass down when I'm still pouring water in my mouth. They go all over me. Is that what you're asking? Okay. So maybe we'll leave it now, and hopefully in your lives you'll have many nice cups of water. But don't keep on holding onto the grass. Now, before we go, we have some notices to Dennis is our Vice President this year, and he's going to be reading out the very important advertisement decision. He's going to do that. Hello, everybody. Just only a few announcements tonight, but just a reminder that, an early reminder really, that on July the 9th, we'll be the entry to the Rhine Retreat. It's really, for those that aren't, that don't know about this, the monks do have a 3-month retreat where they put a lot of effort into their meditation and ceremonial around the monastery for 3 months of the year. Now, this year is beginning on July the 9th, and we usually do have a fairly big celebration day to give them a good push along, a good start for the the 3 month round retreat. And that usually is a very, very happy and colourful day, I might say, at the monastery usually. So I'd encourage anyone that hasn't been to one of those before to put that down on your diary for July the 9th and come down and join in the festivities of that day. Of course, as I've been there before, you're also very welcome. Okay, everybody heard that, I guess?
Sunday,
9:30. And also, just a reminder too, that during the beginning of the month again, tomorrow is the start of another beginning session of meditation. Tomorrow afternoon, between 3 and 4, there's two normal classes that run. One for people that have been meditating for a good while. You can come and meditate as usual as a monk. But there will also be a beginner's class starting at the same time that will take place in the room next door to this main hall between 3 to 4. So if you know anyone that's interested to come along and learn Buddhist meditation, tomorrow would be an ideal day for them to come because it's a structured session over the next few weeks. And also just a final reminder too about the meditation retreat that's coming up on the 23rd to the 25th of June. The registration forms are available for that now over in the Vihara. So for those who do want to go, I'd encourage you to get your registration fairly quickly because there's only a few spots left now and they probably will go quite quickly.
Thank you. Another personal retreat is on a weekend, starts Friday evening till Sunday afternoon. Opportunity to do a lot of meditation and get the mind very peaceful and quiet. More details in the notice board in the reception room over. Now is the time we finish, so we'll just pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. If you have any questions to ask, please stand up and ask them. If you want to have a cup of tea or look at the library, it's open next door.
Satipano bhagavato sāvaka-sāṅkho, sāṅkhaṁ namāmi.